Today on Maine Calling, Maine's land trusts leading the nation. Chances are there's a land trust in or near your community, maybe more than one. There are land trusts all over Maine, and they come in many varieties, from forests to beaches to farmland. What Maine's land trusts have in common is that they are privately owned nonprofits, which provide public access to the outdoors. And they're changing with the times. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about the impact of land trusts in Maine and how they are evolving to better serve their communities. A new report shows that Maine has more land trusts per capita than any other state in the nation. It's a big part of our outdoor culture. How do you use your local land trust? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine is home to more than 80 land trusts. You probably have one near where you live. Today, we are going to find out what sets land trusts apart and what they do. Some of it might surprise you. Joining me for the hour, Angela Twitchell, who is Senior Director of Partnerships and Public Policy with Maine Coast Heritage Trust. She also manages the Maine Land Trust Network. Jordan Kelly is Executive Director for Great Works Regional Land Trust, and Stacy Brenner, President and CEO of Maine Farm Land Trust, also a farmer and also serves in the Maine Legislature. We invite you to join the conversation. How do you use your local land trust? Do you hike there, bike there, send your kids to summer camp, or maybe get some help for your business? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'll start with you, Angela. I think a lot of people are confused a little bit about the role, what a land trust exactly is and what the role is. And it gets even more confusing because there are different kinds of land trusts. And what we're going to be talking about today is the variety that's referred to as a conservation land trust, what most land trusts in Maine are. But, you know, in any community, you might have land trust land, you might have town-owned land, you may even have a state park. So what is a land trust and how does it differ from other forms of, conservation in your community?
There is a lot of confusion around this. Thanks for having us here today so we have a chance to talk this through a little bit. At its heart, land trusts are community-supported nonprofits who conserve land and manage land. And then there's all sorts of different varieties of mission, of sizes, of the area they cover, of programs they offer. It ranges from one town all-volunteer land trust to statewide land trusts with, dozens of employees. And the really unique part of Maine's land trust community is, as you said, there's 80 plus land trusts, many of them really focused on their local community and meeting the needs of that local community. I think today we'll talk about a lot of great examples of local land trusts. Folks can also go to mltn.org, and there's a whole list of all the land trusts in Maine. People can find out more there.
mltn.org. And Angela, as we're having this conversation, a brand new report has come out. You're one of the authors talking about the number of land trusts, the impact of them. But one of the things I learned is that Maine has more land trusts per capita than any other state. Why is that?
Well, I like to think that in Maine, we have a really strong ethic of local control. And that's true in government. It's true in land trust. We really like people in the local communities. Most of the local land trusts were formed because there was a beloved place that they didn't want to see developed. They wanted to make sure it was open to the public for future generations. And that level of local support is really why we have so many land trusts in the state.
All right. And some other states may have more publicly owned land, more state parks, more federal parks, right?
Yes, there are many states, especially as you get further west, where you might just have one land trust, the Kansas Land Trust. But here in New England, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, most New England states have that ethic of local control, and you see that in the local land trust movement as well.
Okay, so let's get an idea of some of the variety here. Jordan, I'll start with you. Your land trust part of the network. You're in southern Maine. Describe the land that Great Works includes and what it's used for.
Sure. We have, we've been around since 1986. We have over 160 projects that sort of start out conserving land, and then some of those end up becoming public access points. So we have 21 conservation areas. Those include things like parking lots, an established trail system, kiosk information. So a lot of our projects don't become these public conservation areas, but they serve a lot of importance.
Like what?
Access to mental and physical health, connecting with nature, you know. Do we all love clean air, clean water? Definitely. So these things help increase biodiversity and habitat and provide quick access for people to get out there and enjoy it.
All right. Well, so you're a pretty big land trust. I'm looking at the areas that you have property in: Elliott, South Berwick, Berwick, North Berwick, Wells, and Ogunquit. And you said 160 projects. Tell us about a project or two that someone might not traditionally associate with a land trust. I think people who do associate, who have a land trust in their community, mainly think it's a nice place to have some trails and go for a hike.
Yeah, sometimes we're really focused on either wildlife conservation. One project that we just did was the Woods to Waters campaign, and this was conserving two large project areas, one in North Berwick, 75 acres, and one in South Berwick, around 79 acres. And that project is particularly interesting because it's conserving the top and the bottom of the watershed. And watersheds, you know, don't care about town borders. They go between communities. So this is a project that will help preserve clean water and habitat, despite what town it is. It goes beyond that.
Stacy, you are here representing the Maine Farmland Trust. Some people might not think of that as a land trust, but it is. How is it a bit different than some of the other land trusts? And how does a piece of property become a part of the Maine Farmland Trust?
Thank you, Jennifer, so much for having me, and also to Maine Public for being interested in the topic. So Maine Farmland Trust is a statewide agricultural land trust. So our focus is to keep open lands open and working lands working. So we are driven by listening to the voice of farmers, making sure that we're serving them and their needs and their need for access to land, which we see as just a critical piece of the infrastructure for our food system here in Maine. So we have just now celebrated our 25th year in operation, and we have about 57,000 acres of land spanning about 390 easements across the state. And our easements are held by Maine Farmland Trust, but the land is owned privately by the farmer. And so all we are doing is purchasing the easement from the farmer. Normally, landowners, farmers approach us and we start working with them. It can take a number of years for a transaction to come together. And oftentimes, farmers are approaching us at a time of succession and transition planning, where they're trying to map out the future of the operation and the land and the ownership.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Stacy, are a lot of these properties in places where there's development pressure, but that the community really wants there to be farmland preserved?
That's correct. So we talk about our work as protecting the last farm in a town, which is incredibly important, but then also working on focusing our efforts on prime agricultural soils and properties that have significant capacity for agricultural production into the future. But we do love working with local land trusts and building the land trust community in a grand way. So we've collaborated with both Maine Coast Heritage Trust and Great Works Land Trust on a recent project that I would love to share about.
Go ahead.
So the Cashmere Farm was a farm property in southern Maine that we collaborated with Maine Coast Heritage Trust and Great Works Land Trust. We closed on the easement just this past March, and it's a 120 plus acre farm. And the exciting collaborative piece of it was that it has 8,000 feet of river frontage, and there was an interest from Great Works to protect that river frontage from making sure we have that nice buffer between the farm and the water system. This is part of their focus area from, I'm not going to get the name of the mountain right, Jordan. You're going to have to help me here.
Agamanicus.
Thank
Mount
you.
Mount Agamanicus, yep. Highest point in southern Maine. Go ahead.
So this was part of their sea conservation initiative. And then Maine Coast Heritage Trust was also part of the transaction, also interested in that upstream migration habitat for salt marsh in the area. So that was an exciting one to work on together. And Great Works will steward that farm easement in perpetuity.
Great. Well, Angela, all the questions I asked you earlier were with one hat on, and that is with the Maine Land Trust Network. Take that hat off and put on your other hat now and tell us about the Maine Coast Heritage Trust and how that is similar or different than other land trusts in Maine.
Yeah, Maine Coast Heritage Trust has been around since 1970, and we, one of the unique things about our work is we're a statewide land trust. We focus our work in the coastal zone. We've conserved about 180,000 acres with our partners and about 337 islands. But from the beginning, what I think is really unique about Maine Coast Heritage Trust is that we saw that we couldn't do this work alone, that it was really important that local communities helped identify where conservation should happen. And throughout the 70s and 80s, MCHT really helped support many local communities in starting their own local land trusts. And then what grew out of that is the Maine Land Trust Network. And around 1995, as we realized with our local land trust partners that there's really value in connecting the land trust, sharing resources, learning from each other, helping all land trusts in Maine succeed. So that's one aspect of our work that I find really satisfying and unique.
And you have farms and you have forests and you have islands.
We do, yes.
All right. And probably your most famous farm is in Rockport, right?
Yes, Aldermere Farm is for sure a beloved place by many.
All right, we're going to go to Ryan, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer, thanks so much for having me on and for everyone who's contributing the call today. Just calling from Portland today. I'm a big conservationist and a mountain biker here in the Portland area, and I wanted to thank especially Presumpscot Regional Land Trust and the Falmouth Land Trust for working with us, the mountain bike community, to develop, you know, some really world-class outdoor recreation opportunities here in the region. It's the kind of thing that some of these more progressive land trusts are doing that's really convinced me to move back to Maine, and I think is really giving a lot of younger folks especially an opportunity to see a really exciting future for themselves in the state of Maine. So I want to thank those land trust partners for really, you know, being open-minded and progressive to work with the outdoor recreation community. I think it's a huge and really, really exciting opportunity we have here in Maine at the moment to be looking forward at a really just exciting outdoor future for everyone.
Brian, let me ask you, if you don't mind, I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you, it sounds like you grew up in Maine, left and came back. Where did you go to and how long ago did you come back?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time out west. I was very fortunate to spend a number of years in Jackson Hole and Utah and Lake Tahoe, California, and really wonderful time out in the western part of the country. And came back to be closer to family and friends, but was still kind of looking to retain that contact with the kind of really outstanding outdoor recreation experience I had out there. So, called the Portland area home and have been working to try to see, just how good of a outdoor experience we can build with our great community here.
Well, Ryan, thanks for your call. And Angela, I see you nodding. And this is kind of what Ryan is talking about, is sort of at the center of some of these conversations, right? He's a mountain biker. And I know that there are trails where people don't want to have mountain bikes because they want to have a certain kind of experience. But there's really, really large mountain biking community, and it's really important to a lot of people. And that's just one little example of the kind of conversations land trusts have to have about the use of their property, right?
Yeah, it's one of that land trusts get to have, right? We get to work with people like Ryan in the communities who are excited about some aspect of connecting with nature. And sometimes it's challenging to figure out how do we put all these uses together, but most land trusts really look at the whole picture of the lands in their service area. Some of them are appropriate for mountain biking. Some you want to just conserve, with farmers for active farmland. Some might make sense just for access for clammers. And that sort of puzzle in working with your community to meet the needs is one of the most exciting things of this work, in my opinion. And Ryan gives me hope. I have two young sons who are in Montana and Colorado, and I hope they'll come back to Maine.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for calling in and joining the conversation today. We're going to go to Rebecca, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi, I am one of the co-founders of Sea Meadow Marine. We were formed as a nonprofit in 2021 when oyster farmers came to us, and neighbors of mine worried because the only working waterfront in town was up for sale. So we kept trying to find a way to save the parcel. I know in Maine, there's only probably less than 20 miles at this point left of working waterfront access out of about 3,500 miles of coastline, which is bigger than the coast of California. So with the help of CEI, we found a way to get a USDA loan and run it as working waterfront. But what we're really working to do is innovate and improve these models and bring to light this predicament. It doesn't fit the model of conservation land trust. So we have a lot of people across the state coming to us asking us how we did it, and we would like to help more to develop a way to save these access points.
Wonderful. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for your call. We do need to go to a break, but right after the break, we're going to be talking to Colin Brown from the Down East Coastal Conservancy, and this is the kind of work that they do. So I really appreciate your call, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking today about conservation land trusts, and there are many roles here in Maine. Joining me for this hour, Jordan Kelly, who is Executive Director of Great Works Regional Land Trust, Stacy Brenner, President and CEO of Maine Farmland Trust, and Angela Twitchell, who is Senior Director of Partnerships and Public Policy for the Maine Coast Heritage Trust, and also very involved in the Maine Land Trust Network. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. As I mentioned before the break, joining us now, Colin Brown, who is Executive Director of the Down East Coastal Conservancy. Thanks so much for calling in, Colin.
Thanks so much for having me.
As we heard our caller, Rebecca, talk about before, preserving working waterfronts is at a really critical moment right now. But I'm guessing that your organization does that kind of work and then also preserves land in a more traditional kind of conservation way.
Yeah, we definitely protect land in all different ways. Downey's Coastal Conservancy was a merger of two land trusts that had roots in Washington County dating back to the 1980s. We steward a little over 7,000 acres in the county, but several of those early actions of those two land trusts that became Downey's Coastal Conservancy were protecting waterfront access and places that had kind of traditional handshake agreements with owners, but nothing set in stone for permanent public access, places that had long been used by clammers and wormers and access to the intertidal zone, traditional boat landing or boat launch sites that helped fishermen get out to lobster boats. And so many places along the Washington County coast where this access was, you know, really needed to be permanent and set in place.
Interesting. I don't know if you heard Rebecca's call, but she felt as though sometimes preserving a working waterfront doesn't fit the traditional land trust model. How have you been able to do that?
You know, it's been really, as kind of Angela said, responding to a lot of the community needs. You know, what do different communities need, depending on where they are, and really kind of working with local folks and people who are accessing the water. You know, where are the most kind of critical spots? Where are spots that might be threatened by potential future development? I think it's really just important to really listen to your constituents and see where that is needed most. And also, I think highlighting some of the work, and I'm sure you'll do more in this hour, of work that land trusts are doing with municipalities in terms of planning for some of these key access points into moving into the future.
Yeah, well, Colin, thanks so much for joining the conversation. Colin Brown with Downeast Coastal Conservancy. Just another example of the different kind of land trust around Maine. I want to, let's see, go to a question that I think is very important. I can't find it now. We have so many emails coming in. Melanie says, what are the speaker's thoughts on the part land trust can play in developing reducing affordable housing? And Angela, that's a different kind of land trust than we're talking about today, right? But it is confusing.
Well, there are community land trusts, community housing trusts that specifically focus on that, but there is a role to play for traditional land trusts in this work. And a big part of the way that land trusts get their work done is partnering with other organizations from different sectors in their communities to accomplish the overall goals of a community. So there are things traditional land trusts can do, like conserve a larger property, but a portion of it may be in the growth zone, and it would make sense to build some affordable housing, and that then they could partner with an affordable housing organization. And there's many different roles like that, and land trusts definitely, as part of the community, see the real need for affordable, and not just affordable, but attainable housing. And we want to be part of the solution. There was a really popular session at our recent Maine Land Conservation Conference where land trusts and housing trusts were talking about ways we can collaborate to help solve this important need.
An email here from Allison. I've been heavily involved in the Maine Land Trust movement since the 1980s, serving on the board at Blue Hill Heritage Trust for 15 years. One challenge, people bring their dogs, sometimes off leash. If wildlife habitat is a land trust goal for certain property, this can be a problem. And what if a dog bites another visitor or comes in contact with a porcupine? The presence of dogs, even on leash, impacts quality of wildlife habitat, water quality, and visitor experience of precious wild wilderness remnants. I suggest land trusts consider developing dog parks, even in rural Maine. These would be separate from areas needed as wildlife habitat. Maine people value our wildlife, but the dog issue needs planning, persistent education, and dog parks. I'm going to turn to you, Jordan, because you are in a populated area. You cover so many towns. Is the dog issue an issue in your land trust?
It certainly can be, Jennifer. You know, as far as available staff time, I think dog parks make more sense as municipal efforts, but certainly identifying land where that's possible is helpful. And to the wildlife question, certainly, you know, any disturbance can happen from people being present or a highway being nearby. So I don't think that no dogs is the answer all the time, but there's certainly places where it's appropriate, or if there's certainly sensitive habitat, then we make adjustments and we go from there.
An email here from Robert, hoping your Maine Coast Heritage Trust guest this morning can talk about the challenges to local communities, such as the Frenchboro Islands, when the trust removes properties from the tax base of the working waterfront. So, Angela, I'm so glad that Robert asked this question, because I know that you want to clear up this tax base issue.
Yes, I'm really glad for this question. As with every project that the local land trusts do, they work with their communities, have conversations about the tax impact and ways that the land trust can work with the municipality to come to a solution that works for everyone. There are places like Frenchboro that have a high percentage of conserved land, and MCHT has worked carefully with them to try, as time has gone on, to make sure that there's a solution that works for everyone. Overall, I think that people assume that all conserved land is off the tax roll, and sort of you see this in the recent census that came out. Contrary to this misconception, 92.6% of all land trust conserved lands remains taxable. So sometimes that means there's an easement on it, so it remains in private ownership, so it's taxed as it would be for anyone, but an easement's on it, so some of the value is reduced. And oftentimes the land might be put in open space or agricultural current use tax program. And sometimes land trusts work out an agreement with the town to pay payment in lieu of taxes. So there's lots of different solutions. We know at MCHTs and all other local land trusts that local municipalities are under so much pressure. It's hard to raise the funds they need to educate their kids and do everything else they need. And we know that's real, and try as best we can to work with them to find a solution that works for all.
And Stacy, what about the farms you work with, Maine Farmland Trust? Are they paying property taxes?
So the properties that we have easements on are owned privately. So yes, those landowners are subject to property tax based on the municipality that they're located in. If they are producing farm income, they're eligible for the state's farm use tax credit enrollment program. So that's an option for them.
But no different than a farm that's not part of your Maine Farmland Trust network.
That's correct. There is the potential that the easement would reduce the value of the assessment by the town tax assessor, but the property would still be subject to property tax.
Calling in now is Steve Walker, who's Mid-Coast Regional Project Manager with Maine Coast Heritage Trust. Steve, I know that you get to manage some of the most scenic spots in Maine. Give us a little list. What are some of the places with a real wow factor?
Hi, Jennifer. First, want to clarify, although I had a great many years working for Maine Coast Heritage Trust, I'm currently the executive director of the Brunswick Topsom Land Trust, serving the fantastic communities of Brunswick Topsom and Bowdoin, Maine. And we have spectacular properties ourselves, everything from Woodward Point down on New Meadows River, which we conserved with Maine Coast Heritage Trust. We were actually founded, as Angela referenced early on, and with help from Maine Coast Heritage Trust. And we're now in our 40th year and have over 3,300 spectacular acres in the Mid-Coast conserved.
Well, I want to talk about something that Colin Brown sort of mentioned just a little bit, Steve, and I understand this is some of the work you do of planning, working with towns on planning. How does that work? How do land trusts help towns?
Yeah, and I think this is a vital part of the picture that most people don't realize. I see land trusts as being a bridge to state natural resource agencies in terms of being aware of and interpreting sort of statewide priorities down to the local level. And then working, I mean, I myself as executive director, and before that when I was at MCHT and elsewhere, work directly with our planning departments, with our recreation departments, even with our school departments. Brunswick Topsom Land Trust currently takes more than 1,000 children, grade students a year through our preserves with the local MS 8075 and Brunswick school departments. We help implement town-based recreation plans and open space plans. And I think real importantly, especially this day and age when municipalities have limited resources, both financially and staff-wise, we help shape the future of those communities through land use planning jointly with towns, what to develop, what to conserve. We currently are looking at joint affordable housing projects that conserve land as well as set land aside in town ownership for future affordable housing. Water quality is huge right now. So I think we really help augment town resources by providing that expertise as well as the extra people capacity that municipalities may not have this day and age.
Thanks so much for calling in. Steve Walker is with the Brunswick Topsom Land Trust. Thank you so much. We're going to go to Steve, who's calling from Frenchville. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm Steve Young with the Upper St. John River Organization. We have a website, upperstjohnriver.org. We formed a land trust back in 2009, nonprofit. We got our 501c3 in 2019, and we've been working with the university, local high school students, technology students, and we've got support. We've adopted standards for wildlife habitat and biodiversity assessments and management as part of our bylaws. We are less, like I understand, along the coast, it's to prevent paving and subdivision, mostly, let's say, in a synopsis, and to have those places accessible to the public. We are interested in promoting mature forest biodiversity and other wildlife habitats and involving students. We just had several classes, Madawaska High School students help us containerize trees donated by Cedar Works on the coast that they've been donating to us every year. They've donated over 100,000 cedar seedlings to us, which is one of our main...
Oh my gosh, that sounds just wonderful, Steve. I'm so glad to hear you. And thanks for calling from Frenchville at the top of the state. Steve, with the Upper St. John Valley Land Trust. We're going to go to the other end of the state pretty much, and Torbert in York. Hi, Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I'd like to just briefly take you back to where it all began in our part of the world. I'd like to tout a few of the pioneers quickly. Number one on that list is Ron Nowell, who is a scion of one of the original families in York. His many great ancestor was the original fort builder that made safe the incursion of the Caucasians into the native lands. Well, he went to Vietnam, served in the Brownwater Navy, and when he came back, he found his little town was under siege. And he and Lily Kendall spurred the effort that ended up being the Mount Agamemnicus Wilderness Reserve. And then when that was done, they found that that was great, but everything was still in play for development. And that's how the land trust was born.
What year was that, Torbert?
As a tool. Pardon me?
What year?
1980.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling in and joining the conversation. And these are the years we're hearing, right, Jordan? Sort of the late 70s, early 80s is when this really got going here in Maine.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, Great Works is 1986, York Land Trust, also 1986, Kittery Land Trust, 1987, Kennebunk, 1972. So we're seeing a lot of 40th anniversaries coming up in the next year, and so important because, as we know, Maine is very popular and there's developments happening all the time. So the community connecting with their local land trust is so important.
We do need to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about the varied roles of land trusts in Maine, how they work and how they're evolving. With me for the hour, Stacy Brenner with Maine Farmland Trust, Angela Twitchell with Maine Coast Heritage Trust and the Maine Land Trust Network, and Jordan Kelly with Great Works Regional Land Trust. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, if you're quick. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Before we get back to the calls, Angela, I want to ask you one more question about the report that just came out today. And I'm wondering if there were any surprises to you, anything that sort of, you're still thinking about as you crunch the numbers and think about what the land trust around Maine told you.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of reading the census when it comes in, we do it every 5 years, is looking at some of the open-ended questions where land trusts get to talk about the kind of projects that they're working on. And those really highlight the ways that land conservation and local land trusts are evolving to meet the needs of the local community. And there's lots of great examples of things like farmers markets, local land trusts working with Wabanaki partners and the tribes to figure out how they can be reconnected to the land and ways that land trust and land conservation can support that. So I feel like those stories really help us see some trends in land conservation, and then the network can help bring resources to all land trusts to explore some of those.
Mm. And Jordan, I wanted to ask you, Maine recently passed a trails bond, $30 million in November of 2024. How does that affect your land trust and other land trusts?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting for us. It's going to allow funding of around $7 million per year for land trusts to take on different projects and improve some of the existing infrastructure and also create new trails, which is just going to be an incredible resource for the people of Maine and all the visitors that come here.
On the line with us now is Matt Marcott, who is Executive Director of the Loon Echo Land Trust. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Jennifer, for having me.
So you're in Western Maine, and I know I have hiked on some of your trails, beautiful, beautiful hiking trails. But that I just learned that's not all that people do on your trails. You allow hunting and trapping as well?
Yeah, so here in the Lake Region, like many other places in Maine, we have a long cultural history of public recreation, which includes things like trapping, hunting, snowmobiling, ATVing, and we're proud to support those uses across our conservation land base.
Yeah, how, and you're going to be the first land trust I've asked this to, but I know that all of them have answers. How have you changed recently? How has the how Loon Echo Land Trust started and who you are now changed?
Yeah, great question. And I'll start by saying that we've really prioritized for almost 40 years public access and public access to conservation land. And that continues to be a priority for us, especially as we see the loss of public access and other private land, that trend increasing. But increasingly, I think it was Colin that mentioned this earlier, but we're seeking to really support the vision for the communities that we serve and how they grow and how they develop. And so we're working with towns on things like comprehensive plans, open space planning. We're providing funding and technical assistance for those efforts. So we're really starting to think of ourselves not just as a conservation organization, but as an organization that supports broader land use issues.
What will summer look like for the Loon Echo Land Trust?
We expect it to be really busy. If many people in southern Maine have hiked places like Pleasant Mountain and Bald Pate Mountain, and we're ready for people. Our parking lots are ready. Our trails are ready. We're really excited to welcome both local people and visitors to our trails all year long, but especially on those sweet summer days.
You know, it's so interesting, Matt, and I'm sure this is true for many land trusts around Maine. Places you mentioned, Pleasant Mountain, places like that in another state, if people have recently moved to Maine, might be a state park, but some of the land trusts around Maine represent really, really spectacular and special places.
I think that's unique about land conservation in Maine. If I travel to other parts of the country, conservation doesn't have the same focus on public access and public use. So a lot of land trusts are essentially sort of operating mini state parks, if you will, both in terms of the infrastructure, the trail infrastructure, parking infrastructure, bathrooms, but also in terms of the use. And to Angela's earlier comment about local control, I think it creates this really interesting framework where we do have these opportunities for people to access land in their hometown and know the people who are managing that land. And if they have questions about how they can use it or where they can go, they can just send us an email or see us at the grocery store and ask us those questions. So I think it's a really unique way of public access, and I'm proud to be part of it here in Maine.
Well, Matt Marcotte, thanks for calling in. Matt Marcotte with the Loon Echo Land Trust. So many calls coming in. I'll get to as many as I can. We'll go to David calling from Westbrook. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I came from a state, Nevada, that the landscape is very different, and that 80% of the land in Nevada is still owned by the federal government, and land trusts are almost non-existent. So here in Maine, I was pleased to find that there is so much land and public access available through the land trusts. So my question for the panelists is, how much land in Maine is managed by land trusts versus by municipalities and towns and the state for public access?
You know, David, I know for a fact that Angela has that information right at her fingertips because of the report that just came out this morning. Hi, Angela, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, a good number to show just to highlight the difference with Nevada. So in Maine, only 6.9% of land is publicly owned. So that's the last, ranks last in New England. New Hampshire has 20.5. So that's a pretty small number that is publicly conserved, when total land conserved in Maine is about 22%. So land trusts are conserving the majority of the rest of that land.
Wow. Wow. So there you go, David. Interesting question, interesting answer. Thanks so much for calling in. We will move up to Norway, Maine, and Lee. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. My name's Lee Dassler. I'm working for the Western Foothills Land Trust in Norway, and we have enjoyed partnering with our local rural Western Maine community in providing assets that maybe our towns couldn't afford to provide. 35 miles of recreational trails, including one particular preserve in Norway called Roberts Farm, that has about 26-30 kilometers of groomed Nordic ski trails, a warming hut, and a full free access to ski and snowshoe equipment during the winter season. So it's a wonderful place for people to bring their families. They don't have to worry about, and it's free access to the trails. So it's great winter active living recreation. And we also do events. We've, for the 15th year, had the Norway Triathlon, and that's a fundraiser for us. But we've also done the Norway Snowshoe Festival, which will be celebrating its 17th year this coming February. And again, that's just something that the town wouldn't do. We wanted to keep snowshoeing history alive in Norway and have enjoyed having that fun time in the middle of winter.
So, well, thank you. Yeah. Go ahead.
We also work with our school district. The SAD 17 just built a gorgeous net zero classroom for experiential learning at Roberts Farm Preserve on our land with our agreement. So we've got fifth graders, third graders, and fourth graders there doing nature-based ed 4 days a week and 5 days a week in the summertime. So.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for calling in. And I love the examples that you're giving of the kinds of different things that land trusts are doing around Maine. We'll move to Holland, who's calling from Wells. Hi, Holland. Go ahead.
Hi. So my name is Holland. I'm from Wells. I'm a Chase. So if you know anything about York County, we're very, very dense in that area. We've been in Maine pretty much since the Mayflower. And so I'm from the area, have lots of family here. But I don't feel like I know enough about our local like land trusts and about like the lands that are available to us, even though I've spent my life, you know, being from here. And so, I mean, I know about like we have the Rachel Carson Preserve in Wells, but I'm curious to know for people who are, you know, employed and working in these wildlife and land trusts, what are you doing to promote awareness of your land and your services that you're offering to the community, Because if people like me who are from Wells don't know about like what is locally kind of in my area and accessible to me and my family, I wonder how people who are moving into the area and are not so familiar with everything are able to find and access these areas.
Jordan, other than hiring Holland to do some marketing for you, what are some ideas?
Sure. And that's certainly things that we're working on. So we're actually, we are your local land trust in Wells. That is Great Works Regional Land Trust. So apologies if we haven't caught your attention yet, but we are there. We are doing a couple of community events coming up. So I'll plug those so you know. We're going to do a live raptor program with Center for Wildlife. That'll be June 14th at our offices right in Ogunquit. So come on by, it overlooks the ocean. We have 60 community garden spots. We'll also be doing a film festival at Wells High School in September. That'll be around 12 to 15 international short films through the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. So we are trying to reach out to our community and be a real resource and come visit. And we have all of our conservation areas on our website. So don't be a stranger.
Holland, what would you recommend for anybody involved in a land trust who's listening right now?
I would personally say that I'm like I said, I'm not obviously up to date with what my, you know, land trust options are, but I would love to see really clear, accessible, like online options for finding out kind of like what offerings are, what like are things stroller accessible? I have two kids under age 4. You know, learning about like what the trails look like, what are you offering publicly, and being able to access those things online. And then also kind of thinking about reaching out to like mom groups, which sounds a little bit silly, but that's a lot of the way that information kind of goes around when you're a parent, especially like a younger one that's a little bit more tech savvy. But knowing that there is an event in Ogunquit on June 14th, I guess I'll just have to come by and introduce myself as Holland from Maine Hauling.
That's wonderful. And Angela, I saw that you wanted to jump in as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that land trusts try all different things to do this and always looking for feedback. One place anyone can go is the Maine Land Trust Network website, because all Maine's land trusts are there and they all have websites where you can find information on their properties and events. Some land trusts do things like send a packet to all new people who move to their community, you know, with some trail maps and a gift membership. So we're trying lots of things, but it is hard to catch everyone's attention because folks are so busy. One thing that really connected people with local land trusts, a sort of silver lining of COVID, was people were stuck at home near their home with nothing to do. And we really saw a huge surge in people using local trails during and coming out of COVID.
For sure. I saw so many more people on our local trails where I live. Holland, thank you so much for calling in. And Angela, one thing I think is really interesting about Holland's call, she says, what is accessible to strollers? And I know that as we talk about how land trusts are evolving, a really important part of what many are doing is becoming more accessible, whether it's a mom with a stroller, somebody in a wheelchair, somebody who's visually impaired, thinking very deeply about how to serve everyone.
Yeah, this has really been a focus of many land trusts. You know, I think in the early days, lots of trails were very rooty and hard to get out on, or there wasn't a lot of information to know what you would be getting into. But in recent years, many land trusts are really working to make sure their trails are more accessible, as well as trying really hard to cast a wider net to get a more diverse group of people out on their properties to enjoy the benefits of them.
And Jordan, we just have a little bit of time left, but are some of those efforts the kind of things that you're doing at Great Works?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been looking at our strategic plan and some things that we'd like to accomplish in the coming year. And one of those is universal access trails, because we do have, you know, a diverse community. And I alone have aging parents that I would like to be able to see get out on trail. So improving accessibility, whether it's the physical access on the trail or improving the user experience online, we're also working on an interactive trail map to give people a heads up on what to expect. And I think that's a really important way so people can prepare and choose what's right for their ability level.
All right. And Stacy, we just have a few seconds left, but the big question, how are you funded?
Well, as you can imagine, managing lands and purchasing easements, and in the case of the other two guests on the show, buying the properties is quite expensive. So we're always looking for support for public measures like a Land for Maine's Future bond that we'll need to get through the legislature in order to get on the ballot. And
private funding. I'm sorry to cut you off. We really do need to go. Thank you so much. Stacy Brenner with Maine Farmland Trust, Angela Twitchell with Maine Coast Heritage Trust, and Jordan Kelly with Great Works Regional Land Trust. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy, Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we discuss the rule of law in the Supreme Court. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.